What does a physician advisor do? Is this a super sweet side gig or a ton of extra work? How do you get involved in utilization review, management, and being a physician advisor? Learn the answers to these questions and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome back to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, welcome back and thank you so much. For my new listeners, welcome, because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Kicking off season 3 of the Talk to Me Doc podcast is Dr. Ronald Hirsch. Dr. Ronald Hirsch is the Vice President of Regulations and Education Group at R1 RCM Incorporated. Dr. Hirsch was a general internist and HIV specialist and practiced in Elgin, Illinois. He was medical director of case management at Sherman Hospital from 2006 to 2012 and also served on the medical executive committee. Dr. Hirsch is certified in healthcare quality and management by the American Board of Quality Assurance and Utilization Review Physicians, certified in revenue integrity by the National Association of Healthcare Revenue Integrity, and on the advisory board of the American College of Physician Advisors. He is on the editorial board of RackMonitor.com. He's the co-author of the Hospital Guide to Contemporary Utilization Review, with the third edition published in 2021. In 1996, he was a guest on the Jerry Springer Show. Well, let's get Dr. Hirsch onto the show. Dr. Ronald Hirsch, welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Well, I already recorded a little bit about you, but in your own words, could you describe to the listeners who you are and what you do?
So I am a trained internist and HIV specialist. I was in practice for 21 years in the Chicago suburban area. In approximately 2006, I took on a part-time job at my local community hospital as a physician advisor. At that time, I didn't know what a physician advisor was, so I had to learn about it. For the next 6 years, I spent that time at the hospital doing that work. And then in 2012, I was hired by a national company to help their clients educate physician advisors, case management staff, utilization review teams, about Medicare regulations and complying with all the myriad of rules that apply.
Great. Well, I'm sure plenty of people listening to the show do not know what a physician advisor is. So let's get started there. What is a physician advisor?
Well, the best answer is it depends. Because if you go to 5 different hospitals, you'll probably find 5 different definitions of what the physician advisor does. At its most basic level, a physician advisor helps guide physicians to figure out whether a patient who's being hospitalized should be an inpatient or what we call an observation patient. So basically, it's determining the correct admission status for the patient so that the hospital gets paid for the care, the physicians get paid for the care, and the patients are in the right status. From that, it grew into involving a whole bunch of other things. One of the biggest duties now of physician advisors is to work with the clinical documentation integrity team. So working with all of these bizarre medical terms that Medicare and the regulators come up with, teaching doctors how to use them properly. So CDI is another role.
You know, on first glance, it seems like, why would anyone want to get involved in this kind of work? That sounds awfully tedious and boring. And why do we want to involve ourselves with the insurance companies anymore?
It's a great question. And unfortunately, the reality is that our healthcare system is so fragmented with hundreds or thousands of different payers, each with their own different rules, that we're forced to do this. And sometimes it takes the physician's unique skills, experiences, and relationships to help the medical staff at hospitals understand all of these rules and regulations.
Yeah, it's very true. I've been doing this work myself since 2017, and I never thought in a million years, I'm an emergency physician, when I was going through residency, that I would ever be involved in Medicare regulations and dealing with the payers and any of that. But it actually is really interesting work. So I think it can appeal to lots of different people. So, I mean, that leads me to my next question. What types of physicians can get involved with this kind of work? Is it open to everybody?
Absolutely. I think any specialty really could get into physician advisor. Really, it's almost like taking a role as an administrative physician. You know, so the skills you need to be a physician advisor are not necessarily the same skills needed to be a good neurosurgeon or infectious disease doctor. You know, it's about building relationships. It's about having a critical eye. It's about being willing to question your colleagues' work. Willing to sit down and read a 1,000-page regulation to try and understand how to do things better, to understand the way that hospitals get risk stratified, the way we look at quality and mortality and all these other things. So, you know, you can be a great surgeon, but a terrible physician advisor. You can be an internist, the best internist, but still, you know, not feel comfortable talking to your colleagues about their care, their documentation, et cetera. Again, I'm like you, I kind of fell into this. I didn't go to medical school planning to go into healthcare administration. And I think for a lot of docs, that's what happens is that, a case manager, they notice that the doctor documents well, that they answer their phone calls, they communicate with their patients. And they would make a great role model for the rest of the physician medical staff. And they get asked to do this job.
Yeah, I found that it really enhances my clinical practice, right? And from my side, I get to see all the stuff that happens on an inpatient. And that really, I mean, that informs some of my admission decisions as well. I'm like, well, no, if this guy comes in, he's going to be in the hospital for 2 weeks and we're going to get paid outpatient. Because we can't justify inpatient, and that, that matters. And so you do everything you can sometimes to keep people out of the hospital. And on the other side of things, I get to talk to people across the entire breadth of healthcare, and learn a whole new skill set that I never had. So I think that's been really cool as well. For those people, coming out of residency or very early into their practice for which this show is targeted at, who may have an interest in getting into this kind of work, how would you recommend getting started?
It's really easy. Go into the medical staff office and volunteer to be on a medical staff committee. Whatever you want to do, get involved on that side of things. You may be on the medical records committee like I was, reviewing charts. Maybe it's the Medicare care evaluation, where you're going to review cases where there's adverse outcomes, mortalities, patient complaints, whatever. But get involved early. Understand the background of healthcare. When I started in this, I, like most doctors, I have no idea how hospitals were paid. I didn't understand, how this coding thing works. I knew to write notes. I thought I did my best. And like most doctors, I thought my patients were sicker than everybody else's. And that's why I could justify my longer length of stay. As you kind of get into these things and start reading other people's records, patients of all different types, you start to see these practice patterns, the variations in patterns. I'm actually really fortunate that I get to travel around the country and do this. So I can see the practice variations that occur from state to state. And, it's pretty amazing. We think that if you go anywhere in the U.S., you're going to get equivalent care, but that's not necessarily the case. So being able to realize that, yes, I want to take care of patients, but I also want to make a difference for our whole healthcare system. That can be the motivation to get involved in something like this.
Absolutely. And even, getting involved in this, seeing the differences between payers regionally and locally as well, is very interesting. Even if they're under the same umbrella company, there's such differences. Having done this in Illinois and now Western New York, it's very remarkable, honestly. But so, you know, I started this really just as a way to make a couple extra bucks. I thought it was a way to supplement my income from home and maybe kind of stave off some of the grueling clinical shifts at times. And then have just increased my time, you know, to the point where I'm almost 50% doing this now for my hospital system. But I think for people that are interested in helping and learning more about the system, and doing something completely different, it can be a way to supplement your income or potentially replace it. I know plenty of physicians do this full time. And I know the company you work for hires plenty of them.
Yes. Although I honestly would not use this if your motivation is to supplement your income, learn how to do joint replacements or spine surgeries.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's a whole different world than what you learn, you know, in medical school and residency.
It is. And you know, I think that's a good point because, you know, if you see, you go on some of these Facebook groups and online and people are trying to escape from clinical practice and people are always like, oh, do utilization work. You know, like you don't want to leave something you hate for something you hate even more potentially, right? Because you might find this extremely boring, extremely tedious. There's so much to learn and never stops. I mean, you know, I'm listening to these podcasts all the time, brushing up on knowledge and reading regulations, like you said, and it is never ending. So I think that's a really important point to make.
Yeah, it's very comparable to medicine. I mean, if I practice medicine today the way I learned it in 1991 when I came out of residency, it'd be a disaster. You know, so just as you know, medicine changes, regulations change, rules change, documentation things change. So you have to be willing to adapt. And like you said, there's a lot of interpersonal relationships here. And, some physicians have the, you know, kind of the I'm in charge mentality, and that's not really going to work in the physician advisor world because you need to collaborate with your colleague physicians. You need to collaborate with nurses, administrators. It's really a different set of, skills.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, you know, you're talking from, again, the bedside nurse, bedside physicians, case managers, all the way up to the entire C-suite, because you're really talking about a lot of dollars and cents at the end of the day. I mean, this is very important work when it comes to the hospital's bottom line and the patients. People don't understand that, you know, when people get billed on the wrong status and the patients end up with a big bill that could have been prevented, you know, you're really doing a big service to them as well. So, yes. No, there's a lot here.
I'll also add, I just want to add one of the other roles I had at my hospital was that the case managers, when there were difficult cases, there was disagreement between family members and physicians, et cetera, they would often ask me as a kind of a neutral body to read the chart and help the family understand what's going on. You know, kind of, I would put on my layman's vocabulary and help them understand. So that, you know, if you picture a family, you know, sitting in the ICU and their loved one is on a ventilator, getting dialysis, and, you know, there's a 14 consultants coming in and there's drips everywhere. You hope that there's some primary physician who's kind of serving as the captain and interpreting things. But often that didn't occur. Each specialty would come in and use their own language. You know, the nephrologist would say, oh, his creatinine went from 8.4 down to 7.8. His kidneys are doing great, right? The pulmonologist would say we've got his FiO2 down from 100 to 90. He's doing great. But nobody's saying, you know, your loved one is still comatose and the chances of him regaining, a level of functioning is minimal. So being able to translate that for patients. There's often patients who are unhappy with their care. You know, they insist on being admitted as an inpatient. They insist on being an observation. They want to stay another night in the hospital. And sometimes you need that administrative person that can explain why we can't do those things. So that's another role the physician advisor in a hospital setting can have.
Yeah, that's almost in that first scenario, you're almost acting as a patient advocate there. Which is, you know, a growing field in and of itself now, but yeah, there's really so many hats you wear and it's interesting when you get started, you think it's just, you know, inpatient, outpatient, observation, whatnot. But then all of a sudden you're getting pulled into meetings on how to decrease observation hours and how to improve quality scores and how, you know, and there's just so this grows and grows and grows, as much as you want it to, of course, you know, it's certainly not for the faint of heart. It's not going to be a cushy, work from home in your PJs job necessarily, unless that's how it's set up for you. Absolutely. Do you think there's a type of person or a type of physician that should not pursue this kind of work?
I think the description you gave of someone who's burned out with medicine and just wants to do something else, but has no drive, no interest in understanding regulations and in getting into the nuances of things, it's not going to work well, because this is going to be, there are going to be times of confrontation. Be it with a medical director, an insurance company, a colleague, you know, an administrator who's saying that we've got to reduce our length of stay. You really have to have some of those political skills to you know, stop, listen, hear both sides of things and come up with a rational plan. So it's really a personality thing. You know, pediatricians can do it. Neurosurgeons can do it. There's no specialty limitation. It's really a personality thing.
That's fair. Hey, they're doing it on the payer side, right?
Absolutely.
So they can do it on the hospital side. Do you have a feeling? I mean, I know you work for a private company, but as far as physicians that want to do this for, let's say, their own hospital system versus like an independent review organization or a third party company, how would you say people should choose or what if they should look at one thing or another, or they should get started on the hospital side, or how do you feel about that?
I always think you should start on the hospital side, because you need to really get a feel for, you know, what's happening behind the scenes in the hospital. If, you know, your desire to work for an insurance company, and I guess I'll have to admit, I think that they pay more than a hospital is going to pay you. Again, understanding the operations is going to help you when you move and apply into the insurance company setting. Absolutely. So I've already forgotten the question.
So start on the hospital side.
Well, start on the hospital side. Yeah, start on the hospital side. And again, how do you start? You know, it's not like you walk in and look at a job listing in the physician's lounge and there it is, physician advisor. Sometimes it's, you know, first of all, finding out who your case managers are on the floors, interacting with them. I can recall one hospital I was asked to educate the new physician advisor. And I followed him as he was giving a tour for a new physician on the medical staff. And he pointed to the case management office and he said, "These are the nurses that throw your patients out of the hospital."
Oh, my God.
I said, that is not the way you start a relationship as a physician advisor, right? You need to be there to help them do their job, help them understand, help them relate to the physicians. So getting to know your case managers is a great start. Talking to your chief medical officer about who's doing this kind of work now, and is there opportunity for you? Again, oftentimes without asking, you know, you may not know that the hospital doesn't have one, but they've been looking and never thought, you know, to consider you. Again, now, you know, in our days, when I started this, there was very few resources. Now, of course, with the internet, you know, with webcasts, like sites like my webpage, there's videos, there's books, there's all kinds of stuff where you can kind of learn some of those basics on how to get started.
Yeah, it's a great, I mean, case managers, very underappreciated. And I think being nice to them at any hospital will get you some points one way or the other. Some hospital, yeah, you'd be surprised that some places just don't even have a program and are either hiring third-party companies or trying to build a program. And there's always opportunity. At my current hospital, I was working for an independent company and was talking to my chief medical officer about different ways to get involved. And he's like, "Oh, you do this stuff? We need some help." And that's how, you know, and that's how that grew. So you really never do know. But I think that's great advice. And the American College of Physician Advisors has some great education. Dr. Hirsch's site is just a plethora of free, awesome information if you're interested in getting into this kind of work. So we're just going to, I think, shift the show a little bit just to get to know you as a guest a little bit more. What do you like to do for fun in all of your free time?
Oh, there's not a lot of that. I do a podcast. It's a webcast Monday mornings called Monitor Monday by a company, Medlern Media, that publishes Rack Monitor. So I'm kind of known as the 24/7 dispenser of regulatory news. So I'm always doing, unfortunately, something work. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm reading Medicare regulations. For fun, prior to us starting some house remodeling, I was an avid cyclist. Now my bicycle got buried behind a bunch of construction stuff, so I haven't had it out yet in the last few months. I'm honestly a pretty boring guy. Obviously, visiting family, you know, doing fun things like that. The last 2 years, of course, it's been tough. My wife and I rented an RV from the Chicagoland area and drove out to Oregon so we could visit our granddaughters and our daughter and son-in-law, but mainly the grandbabies.
Mostly the grandbabies. Yeah. All right, come on.
Yeah, so that was quite an adventure.
Well, that sounds like it. Well, you know, in your bio, you said that you appeared on the Jerry Springer Show. Maybe you can shed some light on what that was all about.
Yes. So back when I was in practice, this is in the mid-1990s, I did HIV work, and I was really the only physician in the suburban area that did HIV care. So I got patients from all over the area. One young lady, you know, regular HIV patient, treated her, prescribed medications, et cetera. I get a phone call one day from a producer from the Jerry Springer Show asking if I would like to appear on the show, because my patient called them and they're going to be doing a show about her. Now, I honestly had no idea who Jerry Springer was. I heard the name and I thought he was like Oprah Winfrey, serious talk, you know, show. They go dig down into issues. So I said, sure, I'd love to do it. What's the issue? And they said, well, her in-laws want to take away her children because she can't possibly be a good parent having HIV.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, I know. I agreed, went down there in the area before the filming. This big giant guy comes in and says, we got to give you your briefing. Now, you guys can scream, you can yell, but you're not allowed to punch anybody. That was my first indication that maybe Jerry Springer is not just like Oprah Winfrey. So I had like a, you know, 30 seconds on camera talking about how she's healthy and able to be a great parent. And that was it.
Well, that's certainly a memorable experience.
I'm sure. Absolutely.
Do you have any book recommendations for the listeners?
Sure. I am the kind of person that at night I read just novels like that have nothing to do with medicine whatsoever. So if anything comes out from Stephen King, I'm on top of it. If you haven't read Fairy Tales, his latest, it's an in-depth, great novel. Take some time to get into it, but stick with it. The other series I just finished was Brian Freeman, the Jonathan Stride series, which is about a police officer in Duluth, Minnesota. Again, interesting murders, how they solve it, his family relationships. Again, just something to turn off the medicine at night and enjoy a good novel.
I have not read the new Stephen King. I have to check that out. Yeah, I do the same thing. I'm a sci-fi nerd, and I read these books at night before bed just to turn everything off. I'm with you. So we've already gotten great advice on this show, but if you could give the early career physician just a single piece of advice about anything, what do you think that would be?
Wow. So keep learning. You're never going to stop learning, right? And the reason I say that, it sounds kind of obvious, but I had one interaction with a hospitalist in my work where there was a patient who was hospitalized with a GI bleed. They had had a stent several months ago, and I asked the hospitalist, what are you going to do about the, you know, antiplatelet agents? And he was kind of baffled. But recently there was had been an article in New England Journal of Medicine talking about, you know, resumption of the antiplatelet agents at discharge, if as long as the bleeding is controlled, is the safe thing to do. And I asked, you know, did you read the article? He said, no, I'm too busy to read journals anymore. So keep learning. The other interesting thing, and I say this with trepidation, and I don't know if you want to edit this out, but there's a great book called Ending Medical Reversals that I would urge really everybody to read. Now, the author, Dr. Vinay Prasad, has kind of gone over the deep end with COVID. But prior to that, he's an oncologist, and he did a lot of writing about things in medicine that have changed, right? Things that, you know, that we adopted as the standard of care that have proven to be ineffective, and how oftentimes we're relying on anecdotes, the way somebody taught us, and not really on the literature, on the evidence to make sure that we're treating properly. Classic example in my days, if a hospitalized patient had an elevated blood pressure, the nurse called the doctor and we ordered sublingual Procardia, 10 milligrams, right? That was it. You did it, right? Now we know that that's a dangerous thing to do, right? You look back at the evidence for that practice, it really was never there. It just became dogma. So understanding that medicine changes and making sure that you can change your practices based on the evidence, based on new literature, is really critical.
Yeah, I think that message is important despite his current situation, if you put it. But yeah.
I should give credit to his co-author, Adam Seifu at University of Chicago, is a great guy. So he's the co-author. I don't want to leave him out. I guess I should refer to the book as Dr. Seifu's book instead.
Fair enough. And Dr. Hirsch, if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about what you do, where can they find you?
Well, I have a website, ronaldhirsch.com. My disclaimer is that I'm a doctor, not a web designer. So when you go to ronaldhirsch.com, you're going to see a very amateurish website. But it was a way for me to for a low cost to build a website, put a bunch of resources out there. There's a box to contact me on there. I welcome any and all inquiries there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, talking to us about being a physician advisor. And thanks for all you do for the physician advisors out there and all the great content you put out, RAC Monitor. I know I'm a dedicated listener myself. So really, thank you for all you do for everyone around the country, because it's really a lot and it's really wonderful. So
I love my work, and that's what makes it fun.
What a fantastic episode with Dr. Ronald Hirsch. He really brought to light a lot of the issues that go into becoming a physician advisor, including what a physician advisor is and does, how to get started, who should and should not get into it, and why it doesn't necessarily make a good escape from clinical medicine. It was also really interesting to hear about a firsthand account of somebody being on the Jerry Springer Show. I had to ask. Thank you again for listening. That's all we have for today. If you like this show, please give me an honest rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, as well as telling at least two of your friends to listen. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is go to my website at andrewtissardio.com, check out some great free resources there, and feel free to follow me on LinkedIn or TikTok. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And keep talking. All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tissardio, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tissardio, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tissardio, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.